صلوات.
اللهم صل على محمد.
Inshallah, we'll start the program with the recitation of the Holy Quran by Brother Hadi. Can I get a last salawat, please?
اللهم صل على
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. سبح اسم ربك الأعلى الذي خلق فسوى والذي قدر فهدى والذي أخرج المرعى فجعله غثاء أهوى سنقرئك فلا تنسى إلا ما شاء الله إنه يعلم الجهر وما يخفى وليسرك لليسرى فذكر إن نفعت الذكرى سيذكر من يخشى ويتجنبها الأشقى الذي يصلى النار الكبرى ثم لا يموت فيها ولا يحيا قد أفلح من تزكى وذكر أسماء ربه فصلى بل تؤثرون الحياة الدنيا والآخرة خير وبقى إن هذا لفي الصحف الأولى صحف إبراهيم وموسى صدق الله العليم في الصلوات.
اللهم صل على محمد.
Thank you, Brother Hadi. Inshallah, we're going to add spoken word to today's program as well. This poem is called With the Pen of Truth Held High. It's actually by Brother Naki Rizvi from the West End. He's a student at York University and he writes a lot of poetry, alhamdulillah. And alhamdulillah, we've also got his permission to read this poem. Can I get a loud salawat before we begin?
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. With the pen of truth held tight in my hand, I write about Hussein's eternal stand and all the suffering he would withstand. He stood for humanity to understand that you are free and you were born to be justice. Sorry, and you were born to be. Justice will prevail over tyranny. He said, I seek reform in my nation. Yazids attacking Islam's foundation. I must stand up for all of creation. I will not bow my head in prostration to any oppressor, for I am strong, and I must protect against what is wrong. Hussein fought through a sea of oppression. Indeed, his struggle was for progression. Humanity saved through his intercession. Achieved victory without aggression. Hussein rules the revolutionary mind. Hussein's kingdom is the hearts of mankind. Where is the justice for which Hussein stood? Today, good is bad, and bad became good. If only people would have understood that they're blinded from seeing what they should. Although we're free, in slavery we live. Our lives and are all that we have left to give. Oppressors stay on top of the food chain. They are high on power like it's cocaine. They'll walk all over you, then you do it again. Just look at Palestine, Syria, and Bahrain. The longer you're silent, the more they'll drain. They'll drink your dignity like it's champagne. Every atom for justice cries out. Us humans pollute as the world dies out. We milk the earth till resources run out. We harm the world that we can't live without. Is this not injustice oppressing the earth to murder with your hands what gave you birth? Hussein said injustice is of every kind. Do not be silent and do not be blind. Stand up for the truth when it is confined. You must not back down, leave your fears behind. Revolt, protest, do whatever it takes until the backbone of these tyrants break. And when change is needed, go seek reform. When you see oppression, do not conform. This is the duty you must perform. Sunshine will follow right after the storm. And when you are alone, do not be afraid. Hussein's remembrance will become your shade. I shall be resistant. I shall not fail. I'm ready to answer to Mahdi's call. Justice will stand to see tyrannies crawl. The flag of Hussein will be standing tall. The day will come, and for that day I yearn, when truth shall prevail, and falsely should burn. Salawat. Before we begin tonight's program, just a few announcements to go over. The first one is for tomorrow's Nehnawa conference. There's still an opportunity to buy tickets for this conference. If you'd like to purchase tickets, they're $10. You can purchase them off the website at nehnawa.com. If not, you can talk to me personally after the program or my sister, which is Sister Saima Ali. The second conference I'd like to speak about is the Interfaith Hussein Day, which is happening on January 11th, 2014. This is the annual event where they put on a play describing the events that took place in Karbala. They also have an annual art competition. The third thing I'd like to also advise about is Ansar Day. That's taking place in about 2 weeks' time on November 22nd and 23rd. This is a volunteering opportunity. It's very great for university students. On the 22nd night, they actually prepare food to give out to the homeless. And then the Saturday day, they hand out the food. They hand out hot chocolate at university campuses and talk about Hussein with various non-Muslims. They also have various speakers throughout the day. And they also have an art competition if you'd like to participate as a spoken word artist, as a painter, any kind of art form. So for that, you can contact me myself. Lastly, for today, we are having a question and answer session in the main hall after the main program is completed. This will be taking place with our own Maulana Sayyid Asad Jafri. It'll inshallah start at 10 o'clock in the main hall. We advise all of you to please join us. And just a few housekeeping rules. There's going to be lots of people coming in, inshallah, tonight. So I'm going to ask the brothers to move in as much as they can to my right here, and the sisters to move up as much as possible as well. And with the last salawat, I'd like to ask Maulana to come up. Salawat.
الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله الذي لا يبلغ مدحته القائلون ولا يحصي نعماءه العادون ولا يؤدي حقه المجتهدون الذي لا يدركه بعد الحمام ولا يناله غوص الفطن ثم الصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين العبد المعيد الرسول المسدد المصطفى الأمجد المحمود الأحمد سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد وعلى آل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين روحي وأرواحنا الفداء ولعن الله أعداءهم أجمعين إلى يوم الدين أما بعد فقد قال الله وقوله الحق بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم ولقد كتبنا في الزبور من بعد ذكري أن الأرض يريثها عبادي الصالحون صدق الله العلي العظيم صلوات على محمد وعلى محمد
اللهم صل على
محمد
وعلى محمد
I get a better salawat than that please inshallah
Thank you
The challenges of establishing Islam in the West has been our ongoing topic. Tonight is lecture number 6. For those of you who have been with me since day number 1, almost a week ago, You know that the description of this topic has been given several times. We are attempting to prepare the grounds for the arrival of our Imam. And we mentioned across one lecture that any social reform, any social revolution that will take place cannot take place until the masses are ready for that reform and revolution. The individual who is responsible to reform the masses will come and he will leave, and the mission will be left incomplete if the masses are not ready. Any social reform, any social revolution has to have some preliminary, some muqaddimat done before the arrival of the actual reformer. We are waiting for the Imam of our time to come and instill a social revolution. And in order for us to prepare ourselves for his arrival, we must take care of the preliminary, and the actual reform, inshallah, will occur when he comes with his revolution. And that preliminary act is the establishment of the Deen of Islam in this part of the world. But of course, like I said, there are challenges, there are difficulties. It's not easy to establish, first of all, the Deen inside of us, and then outwardly into society. But those challenges have to be discussed, they have to be met, and inshallah, they have to be conquered. And so 3 nights ago, we began to list those challenges one by one. We are now on to challenge number 4 tonight. Challenges 1 through 3, if you recall, we talked about the challenge of the heart, of the qalb. How this society will allow you to include anybody and everybody inside of your heart except for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Islam's challenge is to free the heart and allow Allah to enter that heart. Challenge number 2 was the idea of instant gratification. We live in a society of the now. Everything has to happen today, otherwise forget it. Islam believes in a system of deferred gratification. And last night, we talked about the third challenge being the challenge of balancing our life under the banner of Tawheed. We talked about how our lives right now are probably split up across 4 or 5 different lives. The life of work, the life of home, the life of community, the life of ourselves, the life of online media, etc., etc. The gelling and the harmonizing of our life into one banner of Allah is the crux of Tawheed. It's a challenge. Because this society will always speak to you about the fact of imbalance. You cannot succeed unless you invest X amount of hours in your business. Those X amount of hours are taken from somewhere else in your life to justify the 15 hours here in your business. So we have individuals right now, many times have come to me and asked me, how do I balance this out? You know, I have a career that I'm trying to look after. I have a family who needs me. The community always complains that I'm never around. Allah, I'm sure, is upset with me. I can't balance my life out. And while yesterday's discussion wasn't about time management so much as it was about a mental balance and a physical and a spiritual balance under Allah's banner of Tawheed. And tonight's challenge is the challenge of tolerance and the ego. And as we move forward together until we get to the day of Ashura, these challenges become more and more tough every single day. And there's a reason why I had created our lecture such light, because I know that the amount of crowd that I'll see from today until Wednesday or Thursday, I won't get after Thursday. So it's important for us to send the utmost important message out there before, again, we lose you until next Muharram. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. The Deen of Islam, as many of you know, came about to instill many different akhlaqi realities into the people. And the ones that we know about patience and about kindness, about compassion, etc., etc., they're all in front of us. You've heard it 1,000 times, I don't want to repeat that. But one area of concern that I'm seeing and that my other colleagues who travel in different communities are seeing is the lack of tolerance amongst our youth, and specifically the lack of religious tolerance amongst our youth. And let me paint for you a picture, a journey that sometimes our youth, ourselves, go through. We reach a certain age of 15 or 16 when we begin to mature intellectually. And we end up, and again, I'm generalizing here, of course. There are many of you who are the exception. There are many of you who this story doesn't fit. But what we're seeing is generally, this is what happens. Is that at that age, the furthest thing away from the mind of the youth is the pleasure of God. At that age, it's all about feeding the ego and feeding the nafs. At that age, it's all about living carefree, no obligation, no consequence. The idea of Islam, the idea of wajibat, the idea of muharramat, all these things are not there. And we live that life, and we live that life of enjoying ourselves and partying and doing things that are haram and so on and so forth until the epiphany happens. Until, like I love to say, that spark happens. Until we wake up from our sleep. Now some, it takes a while for that epiphany to happen. Others, it happens a little bit closer to their teenage years. But nonetheless, the epiphany happens. This person now has an influx of deen and taqwa. This person begins to understand that my life before was not a good life. I need to turn things around, and let's start from now. So they'll dress differently. We have a few more hairs on our face, a few more books that they've read, and they begin their journey towards God. And as they begin to further that journey, they become more and more rigid when it comes to the deen. The deen for them becomes more and more strict by the day. They strip themselves of any sort of happiness when it comes to the deen. And each time you see this individual who's now been blessed with that epiphany, you see this person to be in a state on the outside to be very miserable. He stops smiling. She's not approachable. I can't talk to them anymore. There used to be a time when we used to do this. I can't even do this anymore. All after the epiphany. And then what ends up happening is, and before I continue, let's move forward please with one salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Are those black things dry? No. That's not good. Sorry, can we come please as close as possible? Just right up here beside me, I apologize.
Muhammad
wa ala Muhammad salawat. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad
wa ala Muhammad.
Let's get comfortable. There's a lot to say tonight. Are we all set, inshallah? Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad, please. So this journey, this youth is living. Has an epiphany now and becomes a little bit more strict, a little bit more hardened. And then, and this is where the problem lies. He or she takes their version of Islam and begins to paint everybody else with the judgment of their picture of Islam. They begin now to judge every single person around them. Their level of tolerance towards others begins to drop. They now start to believe that they are the fountain of taqwa. They are the source of knowledge. They are the ones who will guide others towards the path. And those individuals in the past who they were very close to, Now, slowly, bit by bit, they become victimized of that intolerance, like their parents. They used to do everything their parents told them to do. They would never question anything their parents told them to do. And now, all of a sudden, their mom is saying, do here, do this, go here, eat this, don't do this, do it this way. And now they stop, they question, they ask for proof. When they don't get it, they simply don't follow what the mom or dad is doing. And then the parents call me and say, what are you teaching my child in that tent? Because 5 years ago, he would listen to everything I had to say. And now, after the epiphany of Islam, I can't even talk to my son anymore. He won't listen to a word I say. Unless I present to him 5 ayat of the Quran and 4 hadiths, he won't do what I ask him to do. Friends we've had since childhood now are friends that no longer can hang with me because they don't have that epiphany within me. The community that we used to love to attend and run to, enjoy our times with our elders, go every Thursday, that same community now is backward, is ignorant. They live in the East. They don't give me what I need. And so bit by bit, what ends up happening is you cut out ties with those individuals who once was a source of your comfort and happiness, but now doesn't fit your Islamic bill, so you cut them off. And you become rigid. You become strict. Even those things that are halal pleasures for you, you've made haram for yourself. You've made your life so difficult. And all because maybe you found one ustad, you found one teacher, either as a physical teacher, or maybe you found a blog online that you follow, or maybe you found a website, or a YouTube channel, or a random Twitter handle that you follow, whatever the case may be, the more you're being fed whatever you're being fed, the more intolerant you become towards others who may not have the epiphany that you had. And the damage being done is not one-folded, it's two-folded. One, you're doing damage to your own self. On top of that, an individual who might be beside you, in your house, in your community, who's on the fence of Islam, who could go either way, and he stops, he sees you, who used to be just like me 5 years ago, had the epiphany, fell on this side of the fence, on the side of Islam, and now look at him. Can't smile, no friends, doesn't hang out, nothing. And then the person says, if this is what it means to be Islamic, I don't want the Islam. I'm good where I am. And the Quran warns us about those kind of people. The Quran says, do you want to know who those individuals are? Who believe they're winners, but really they're losers in hereafter? الَّذِينَ ظَلَّ سَعْيُهُمْ فِي الْحَيَاةِ الدُّنِيَا وَهُمْ يَحْسَبُونَ عَنُّهُمْ يُصْنُونَ صُنْعَ. Allahu Akbar. Individuals whose efforts in this world are wasted, are dhalla, they're zaleel, they're gone, while they believe what they're doing is righteous. While they believe what they're doing is going out and putting out fires inside their families, communities, and friends, meanwhile, what they're doing is wreaking havoc across the communities. I don't understand where this is coming from. I'm seeing a trend in our youth that's developing, and it's my responsibility, sitting on this member, to call that problem out. It's not a sweet pill to give or to eat. But I ask you, Islam came about to destroy borders and bring down walls. The youth today, some of them are putting up those walls right back up again. That this is my deen, these four walls, anything outside is not the deen of Islam. This is the one source of ilm that I have. This individual, this alim, this speaker, this book, this ideology, this fikr. If nobody fits in that fikr, it's either you or it's me. There's no sort of tolerance. Those walls go right back up. Nothing. Islam says, look, ilm is ilm, doesn't matter where it comes from, take it. If it's lying at the feet of shaitan, pick it up, put it in your pocket. If it's in the hands of the masumin, take it out of their hands and go with it. Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam. Ma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. And let me say this in brackets. I don't need to, but I will. I'm saying this completely out of love for all of you and for myself. I love myself, yes. Completely out of love. If I'm yelling, that's just how I talk, unfortunately. It's out of love completely. It's trends I'm seeing we need to squash now. Imam Ali says that ilm, true knowledge, if it decides somehow to get inside the heart of a hypocrite, it sits in the heart of that hypocrite at a very uneasy level. He's very, very uncomfortable. Like sometimes when you guys are at someone's house, you don't want to be there because your parents dragged you, and you're sitting there and you're very uncomfortable, and you're like, it's cool, every 5 minutes. That level of discomfort is how true knowledge is inside of a hypocrite's heart. And when it leaves the hypocrite's heart, it goes searching for the heart of a mu'min, where it will reside with comfort and with security. It's possible that a hypocrite has that ilm inside of them. It's up to you and I as mu'mineen to pull it out of them and use it for our own good. But no, even those who are the sahibi ilm have to be labeled and judged that you're not good enough for me. All year round you wait for one speaker to come for 10 days, 15 days, and your source and your amount of knowledge for the entire year rests on these 15 days. Because everybody else doesn't fit the bill. I sit in his lectures, I sit by, and he repeats himself over and over again. I don't get anything out of it. These are walls that we create. Intolerance. And this is all after the epiphany. That's what kills me. You were more intolerant after the epiphany than you were before the epiphany. You were less judgmental after you had the epiphany. Sorry, before you had the epiphany than after. And Islam is saying, what's going on? Islam says, I came about to create tolerance inside of all of you. I came about to have this level of compassion, to not judge other individuals. There's a reason why the Prophet's one of his greatest companions was a black slave. There's a reason why his greatest companion was an Iranian and a non-Arab. To break down these barriers. And we're putting those barriers right back up. Intolerance, completely intolerance. If Allah gave you that little bit of tawfiq, if Allah gave you that epiphany, thank Allah by praying for others who you think has low tawfiq. If Allah has given you the tawfiq to start wearing hijab, the last thing Allah wants for you to do is to judge the sister beside you who doesn't wear hijab, who comes decked out to the majlis, and you sit there and you think, huh, look at her. Does she not know? This is not Imam Hussein's valima. It's his majlis. She has no sharam that she's dressed like this and wearing this. How do you know? There are several types of hijab out there. One of them is the hijab of the actual physical beauty. The other ones are the hijab of the eyes and the ears, the tongue and the heart. It's possible that you, sister, are covering your hair, but the other aspects are bare hijabi. While there are other sisters who might have hijab all over their inside, they just cannot bring themselves to cover their hair. Pray for that tawfiq. Don't bring them down. Because Allah has given you tawfiq now to cover yourself. That's not the way Deen of Islam comes about. And where this starts from the root cause of shaitan. Because we have used the deen to serve ourselves and nothing else. Right? As husbands, if we sit in a majlis for 1 hour, and the alim talks about the rights of a husband in a marriage. Right? That's the only majlis, from start to finish, we'll listen to. We'll go back home and tell our wife, do you see? This is my right. From this day forward, Islam demands you, my wife, to be this way towards me, the husband. Now go. Our parents always remind us, right? Bil walidain ahsan, the Quran says, be good to your parents, be good to your parents. Do you hear today's speech? It's all about being good to your parents. We've used the deen to serve ourselves. The deen says, man, I came here so you can serve me, not the other way around. We've used the deen for our own pleasure. And it stems from two different areas. And I'll discuss that in a moment. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
It's already halfway through my speech, and I haven't gotten to my topic yet. So stay with me, please, inshallah. I'll go fast as I do usually. Number one, the problem lies that when you were living your life pre-epiphany, pre that moment when you thought to yourself, you know what, the only thing Muslim about me is my name, let's change that. You might have been part of a clique, part of a group where you were the man, right? You were the thug, you were the gangster. You're like, yeah, yeah, that's me. That's how it is. And now that you've come post-epiphany, those people have left you because now you're soft and you're weak, and now you have this factor, this movement inside of you that still wants to dominate individuals like you did before the epiphany. So now you use the deen, your knowledge, to now judge others, control others, and begin to label others. We sometimes walk around with a sticky pad and a piece of and a pen, and we write and we stick it on people. You're Jahannami, you're Jannati. You're great, you need help. You have potential, you're not bad, you could be of help. And we sit there and we stick it on people's foreheads, one by one. And then we think we're doing a great service. And the most difficult part is, the more our knowledge increases, the more our ustad gives us, the more we become shallow and tolerant and full of ourselves. That's why Imam Sajjad alayhi salatu wasalam says that, oh Allah, salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. That's why he says, oh Allah, the moment anybody elevates me on the outside, lower me that much more on the inside. Allahu Akbar. It's difficult. What we love most of all sometimes is that pat on the back. What we love most of all is to be right. And the root of that is shaitan. Shaitan's disobedience towards Allah wasn't about some sajda. It wasn't. He did sajda to Allah for 4,000 plus years. It was about the fact, as some Mufassirin have said, that he believed himself to be more worthy for Allah's khilafat than Adam. His jealousy, his envy came from the fact that he's made from clay. I'm from fire. Why are you making him your khalifa? I'm worthy of that distinction. The funny thing was that what Adam was sent down to do, there wasn't some high-paying salary, no vacation time, no benefits, nothing. In fact, there was a burden, a responsibility to do what? To be a khalifa of Allah on this earth. But shaitan says, no, I want that position. Why does he get that position? So he refused to bow down to him. And sometimes when we have that level of intolerance, we look to others and we think to ourselves, why is this person this way? Why am I not this way? That's why in the world of akhlaq, they have two types of envy. One is positive, one is negative. One is hasad, one is ghibta. Hasad is what? Oh Allah, give me and strip it from her. Ghibta is, oh Allah, give me, and whatever you give me, give to her as well. If you see somebody who, mashallah, has found the light, quote unquote, tawfiq, inspiration, taqwa, and actually has changed herself for the better, or himself for the better, using her or being envious towards her for a positive note is something the world of akhlaq says is great. But the problem lies when we become so rigid inside of our own deen that now nobody's good enough for me. You forget the fact that 5 years from 5 years ago, you were in the exact same position as those that you judge right now. The Deen of Islam came to be a tolerant religion. Within the circle of Islam, there are several people who can reach the path of Allah through various ways. You might have one way. For you to travel your path and close all the other roads that lead towards Allah and judge those based on your path is ignorance and nothing else. And I ask you to please thank Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. If Allah has given you that moment where you stop and you think, what am I doing in my life? Thank Him. By guiding others by your behavior. That's why Dr. Tijani, who you know to be, used to be a high Sunni cleric and alim, a mufti, I believe, became Shia, wrote, "Then I Was Guided." His very famous statement is that, "I thank Allah every single day that I met the Ahlul Bayt first and then the Shias." If it was the other way around, I wouldn't have become Shia. So those of you in the tent right now, ask yourself, and I ask you personally myself, if you are somebody who is on the verge of changing your life, if you've lived your life a certain way up until, let's say, the eve of Muharram this year, and you made a promise to yourself and to Allah that I'm going to try now to reform my life, and you see somebody beside you who you believe is a pious individual, but presents Islam to be a very strict and a very difficult religion, don't use that person, I'm sorry, as a blueprint for Islam. Use the Ahlul Bayt as blueprints for Islam. Our fifth and sixth Imam allowed thousands upon thousands of people to come at their door and ask whatever they wanted. Non-Shias, non-Muslims, non-believers in God. There was no judging at all in the Ahlul Bayt world. You know the very famous standard statement they would use if someone came to them and insulted them? They would say what? They would say, if what you're saying about me is true, then may Allah forgive me and guide me. But if what you're saying about me is not true, may Allah forgive and guide you. Look at the beautiful response of the Ahlul Bayt. Our ego gets in the way. Our lack of tolerance for other individuals gets in the way. And we become so high and mighty that when someone comes and says, "Brother, look, I've been noticing this about you," right away you shoot them down. You don't even entertain the thought, this brother might be right. I warn all of you against that, please. One salat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
And how do we do that? How do we make ourselves more tolerant towards others? And I ask those of you in the tent as well, if you are an individual who is somewhat in the power of leader, in a position of leadership, where maybe in your household you're looked up to, maybe in your family you're highly respected, maybe in your community you have someone of a following around you, examine and ask yourself, how am I presenting the Deen of Islam to others? Am I presenting the Deen of Islam as a very intolerant, difficult religion? Or as the Holy Prophet did it, an approachable, submissive, very tolerant religion? Now, how do I build tolerance? How do I fight this thing inside of me called the ego? The ulama of akhlaq have mentioned a couple of reasons. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. One way is this idea of self-diagnosis. When we become tolerant or understand our own faults, we become tolerant to the faults of others. When When we begin to understand that I'm not a perfect human being, then the imperfections of others are accepted by us. Because sometimes when things are so clear to us, we don't understand how someone else can't see that same level of clearance. When you have decided that it's so easy to follow Islam, I don't get why this person can't do it. That's a problem that we have inside of us. The other factor I want to speak about besides that, and that requires you to do muhasabah, accountability. I've spoken to all of you about that several times. Other ulama have spoken to you about that. To constantly be in a state of reform. Never be comfortable with the amount of iman that you have achieved. Yes, if you need to motivate yourself to say, you know what, I got through a very difficult time with Allah's tawakkul, then great. But never stop climbing the ladder towards Allah. Point number two. If right now, what I'm saying to all of you, you're listening to inshallah, and right now in your thought, in your mind, you're thinking, you know what? I know at least five people who Asabhai is talking about. Know that I'm talking about you. Because sometimes we believe, those of us who have a little bit of taqwa, an epiphany, I'm using that a lot today, I think. Anyways. Allahumma salli ala. My biggest fear for myself and all of you is that we enter the realm of shirk. Shirk-i khafi, the internal hidden shirk. What's that shirk? That without me, this group of people can't be guided. I belong to an elite group, let's say, led by an elite scholar. Let me walk around the earth, the community, and I'm a representative now of that group, and let me guide the masses. As if to say that without you, they won't be guided. So you have removed God from the equation and inserted yourself in that equation. That's not shirk? Sure it is. And I'll tell you the same story I told the AMYS when I first met with them weeks ago about my first year in the Hawza in Qum. When my teacher asked me, what are you doing here? You're from Canada. They have green trees there. They have water that's sweet out of the taps there. Nice people, I've heard. First world country, services, luxuries. You left that. You came to Qum. It's a desert. It's hot. There's salty water coming out of the taps. Why would you want to make that move? And I told him the typical answers, you know, taqwa and piety and blah, blah, and all this kind of stuff. And then I said by mistake, which really upset him, I said, I want to go back and help a little bit of the youth there. And he got mad. He said, if that's your intention, then do yourself a favor, do me a favor, and do those youth a favor, and go back to Canada. Can we ask people to please move forward? I'm getting signals from the back. I don't know how much you can move forward. There's lots of space over here right in the corner. I'm sorry. If I can have volunteers actually stand up and perhaps move over. There's at least 7 or 8 spots here to my left. Salat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad, please.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad.
So I arrived in Qom on a very on a high pedestal, I guess, and I came across that way, and he, in a matter of minutes, completely struck me down. And I love him for it. He said, Who are you? He's like, who are you to think that you're going to go back with a moon and a star in your chest and save the day? Who are you? What do you have that you're going to go in and give them hidayat? How much hidayat do you have yourself? He said, you're here for one person. You're here for yourself. If you can save yourself, you've done a big deal. Forget anybody else. Because Allah is Ghaniul Hamid. He's needless and He's the one who's praised. He doesn't need us for His deen. Because you're here for yourself. So if you think for a moment that Allah has given you a little bit of tawfiq to go out and save the world, sit down. Calm down. Save yourself. Everything else will be okay. Because Allah, like I said to the Amy's group, Allah is the same Allah who used Fir'aun to give tarbiyat to the Prophet of Allah, only to have that same Prophet topple Fir'aun's kingdom. When it comes to Islam, God doesn't play, man. He's got a plan that you and I cannot even touch. He uses Fir'aun for His own doing. Fir'aun has no idea he's being used by the same God that he denies. Oh man, that's sweet. Fir'aun thinks that, oh yeah, I've conquered God. I've labeled God as me. I am God. I am my own idol. I don't believe in God. God goes, you can believe in me all you want or not believe in me all you want. I'm using you to propagate my deen. This Musa that you've given home to, shelter to, food to, is the same Musa that's going to topple you in a matter of years. And he did. Don't think that you and I talk to myself first, you're out there guiding the world, trying to please this person. Absolutely not. God's plans are far beyond you. If you have a little bit of God's mercy and ni'mat and rahmat to be able to help the cause, that's for your good, not for Allah's plans. But these are all things that are internal. Because on the outside, mashallah, you look good. Nice beard, a little bit of dirt here, pretty good. Nice long dress, crisp white, you look good. Every year when I see you, the beard gets thicker and thicker, mashallah. The hijab gets tighter and tighter. There's sleeves now this year, mashallah. You're getting there, it's good. But on the inside, you're corrupting yourself. And I'm not here to paint a blank picture. I'm not here to make you hopeless. I'm here to say to those of you in this audience who might be on the fence, the deen of Islam is a lot more tolerant than sometimes we present it as. There are individuals in our communities, guys, individuals in our communities who have left the maktab of the Ahlul Bayt because they believe there's too much ikhtilaf amongst the scholars of Shiism. In his world, in their world, it should be that. There should be one black and white scripted answer for every question. Everything else is wrong. Because the deen of Islam is all black and white. Either it's yes or no. Halal, haram. There's no gray areas in the deen. Absolutely not. There are areas in the deen open for interpretation. And when you deliver that interpretation to the masses, you have to look at the level of capacity. What these individuals who claim that if I ask one Shia scholar one question, it's one answer. Another question, another answer. These guys are not on the same page. The whole faith is wrong. Let's bounce. Let's go somewhere else. What he doesn't understand, those of you in this tent who might have that thought, what you don't understand is this idea of ikhtilaf is not ikhtilaf. It's the seerah of the Ahlul Bayt. How many times have you heard that in the life of our sixth Imam, Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq, alayhi salatu wasalam, several people have come to him with the exact same question. Let's say four. Four came to him with the same question. Four different answers given to four different people. And when the companion asked Imam Sadiq, why would you do that? He says, I'm giving each person an answer based on their capacity to understand. That's not a difference of opinion. That's not where one marja is saying namaz is wajib, another one that salat is haram. No, come on. It's the idea of capacity and interpretation. And that's the beauty of this deen. It's very tolerant on the mind level, very tolerant on the life level. The Prophet of Allah has been commanded by Allah, when you present the deen of Islam, present it as a very easy religion. Go slow. Don't make things absolutely haram from the first day. Sharab, alcohol, was not made haram until Medina, 15 years after the fact. Why? Because Allah knows that from day number one, if I made sharab haram, they would have left the deen. Look how tolerant he made him towards the Sharia of Allah. And you and I come in black and white. Either you fit in black or you fit in white. Everything else, you're ikhraj, kharij from the deen. You're out. You're not worth my time. Because now I have an epiphany. I have a little bit of taqwa. I'm a student of this alim or this ustad. I follow this guy online, etc., etc. Give me a break. You think you're doing khidmat to the deen? You're not. The deen gets wider and wider every single time. It's an ocean, as you guys have heard. You're swimming in one corner of the ocean, going round and round, praying to Allah, I don't drown in my corner of the ocean, while you reject the other kilometers of ocean behind you. That's not deen. If one guy is swimming on this part of the ocean, and you're swimming here, it's the same ocean. It's just not in your area. Instead of saying that part of the ocean is wrong, say hello to that part of the ocean. Hello. That's it. It's very simple. But the intolerance, religious intolerance I see amongst our youth today, especially those who have found the light, is unacceptable. There are 1,000 ways to come towards Allah within the circle of Islam. Allow others to find their path towards Allah. There are many of us who on the outside, maybe there aren't signs of deen, but on the inside, they're believers in Allah. And I don't care if that judgment and tolerance happens on the azadari level, on the ibadat level, on the marja level, on the wilayat level. Doesn't matter to me. Intolerance is not accepted across the board. If you're up here, wait for people to come and reach your level. Don't step on them as they come up. Because I'll tell you, as you climb a ladder, and we move towards Masayib, as you climb a ladder, you go step by step by step. There are many of us, who have skipped steps to come to the top of the ladder. And now we sit here on top of the ladder, and we're hoping not to fall. Because if we fall all the way down to the bottom. When your deen does not have a base, when you spend the first 20 years of your life, I'm sorry, with no deen, no madrasa, no ilm, no ibadat, nothing, and all of a sudden now, the next year I see you, and you're Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, I have a problem with that. I'm praying for you. Because the base is weak, one slip and you're down again. And then to see you judge others, it makes me bang my head. And all goes back to the ego. And this society preaching the ego to all of you. In the entertainment world, it's all about me. I did this. In the music world, you can't touch me. You can't see me. I don't know, you can't tickle me. Me, me, me. Everything's me. Right? They have these disgusting lyrics in their songs. They go on stage to accept their award. The first person they thank is Jesus. Because without Jesus, I'm nothing. And Jesus is like, bro, man, don't mention me on stage, please. I have nothing to do with you whatsoever. I'll eat your children for dinner, thank Jesus. No, please don't thank Jesus. But that's the society that we're in. Do what you want, and then thank Jesus. Eliminate the level of intolerance. And begin to be tolerant individuals towards each other, your family, your community, and those around you, inshallah. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Sallallahu alayka ya Aba Abdullah. Salamu ala al-Husayn. Wa ala Ali ibn al-Husayn. وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين The Shahadat of Musab ibn Aqil, which we commemorated before the month of Muharram on the 9th of Zilhajj, is a Shahadat that should be mentioned in the first 10 days. And traditionally, historically, tonight, we remember the two sons of Bibi Zainab, Ona Muhammad, but I read their musibat last night. Tonight, I'd like to talk a little bit about the ambassador of Imam Hussein's mission, Musab ibn Aqil. There are immense lessons that we can draw from the story of his shahadat. As many of you know, thousands upon thousands of letters were written from Kufa to Imam Hussein to come and guide him. They don't accept Yazid to be the Khalifa. Imam Hussein, like was the practice of the prophets and the imams, sent an ambassador, a representative, to go to Kufa and to see what the situation is like. Muslim went to Kufa, and those people who wrote the letters were the same people who came and gave bay'at to Muslim. 18,000, some say. Sheikh Abbas Qumi narrates Nafas al-Mahmum, 25,000. It's not a joke. It's a lot of people. Nu'man ibn Bashir, who was the governor at that time of Kufa, understood that there might be an inner revolution. Told Yazid what's happening in Kufa. Yazid sent Ubaydullah to go and to become the new governor of Kufa. And the first thing Ubaydullah did was threaten those individuals who gave bay'ah to Muslim. And say, if you take any steps to bring your Khalifa down, know that you will lose everything. Your life, your belongings, your family, everything. And while the majority of them took that threat and left the side of Muslim, there were still a handful who were standing beside Muslim. And then Ubaydullah went one step further and went to the women of the men of those who stood beside them, convinced their wives and mothers. They in turn convinced the husbands and their sons, until that one fateful moment where Muslim is reading a salat in the masjid, and when he starts the salat, there's a whole congregation behind him. The moment he finishes Maghrib, there's not one person behind Muslim. In a matter of days, from 25,000 to one alone. All because of a few empty threats. It's one thing to give bay'at to your imam with your tongue. It's one thing to give bay'at with your actions and your amal. A message for you and I. When Muslim came out of the masjid, there was an army there waiting for him. They surrounded him and they began to fight. This was the man who was part of Ali's family. They realized the enemy did that one by one. They couldn't defeat Muslim. And so they began to do what they did in Karbala, surround every single shaheed, and from the back and from the front and from the side, from the left and from the right, begin to attack him. Spears and rocks and arrows. They brought Muslim down and they dragged him towards the castle of Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad. And as many of you know, the sign that they wanted to send and the message they wanted to get across to Imam Hussein was through Muslim shahadat. So after killing Muslim, they dragged him up to the rooftop of the palace. And they were about to throw his body over the roof until our books say that Muslim moved towards Medina and said, As-salamu alayka, ya Aba Abdullah. Our salams to you, O Aba Abdullah. And my heart tells me, inside of his heart, he wishes somehow he can get the letter back to Imam Hussein that please don't come towards Kufa. The Shias here are not ready for you. If only that letter reached Imam Hussein, then maybe, just maybe, he wouldn't have to sit there with Hazrat Abbas's armless body at the banks of Furat. If only that letter reached Imam Hussein, then maybe he wouldn't have to say his khuda fasita sakina. If only that letter reached Imam Hussein, he wouldn't have to take his six-month-old Ali Asghar for water. But Imam Hussein left already. It was too late. And it's enough for our Masaib to know that when the news of Muslim Shahadat reached Imam Hussein and reached the masoom ears of his yatim daughter, Atika, Imam Hussein went first straight to the daughter, held her, kissed her, hugged her, put his hand on her head, stroked her head, and said, "From this day forward, I will be your father. I will be your sarparast. I will be your hidayat. I'll look after you. And I'll say this to you, Atika, my condolences to you on the shahadat of your father. But how lucky are you that you have Aba Abdullah as a father figure. But I will say this to you, my Mullah Hussein, I hope that when you said that to Atika, that Sakina wasn't anywhere near you. Because then she would expect that when she becomes yatim, that there will also be a person to hug her, to kiss her, to place their head on her head, to tell her that from this day forward, I am your father figure." But we know that Sakina, that didn't happen. Where you were made yatim, where they should have hugged you and kissed you, they slapped you, they ripped the earrings out of your ears, They burnt your clothes on fire, and then they buried you in the Zindan of Sham, exactly in those same libas. In fact, the only time that you saw your father's head was when Yazid Mal'un couldn't handle the sound of your crying. And he asked, "What will silence this four-year-old?" And the answer came, "All she wants is the head of her father. Bring that head to her." Imam Sajjad says, "Poppy Amma, I don't hear Bibi Sakina crying. I don't hear her sounds crying. Can I go check to see what's happening?" He went to her zindan, and there you find a four-year-old yatim clutching the head of her father. Inna lillah. سَيَعْلَمُ الَّذِينَ ظَلَمُوا أَيَّ مِنْ مُنْقَلِبٍ يَنْقَلِبُونَ إِنَّا لِلَّهِ وَإِنَّا إِلَيْهِ رَاجِعُونَ. We ask you, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, to accept this qaleel ibadat, inshallah. We ask you, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, as the day of Ashura approaches, to give us tawfiq to understand the movement of Ashura, inshallah. We ask you, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, that while our hearts are soft, that you accept our du'as for the preparation of the arrival of the Imam. And there's so much injustice, so much tyranny all over the world. We ask you, Allah, to hasten that reappearance and to allow us to be beside the Imam when he comes, inshallah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa